Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View. I'm your not-so-humble host, PK, and I'm here every Monday evening on bbsradio.com, station 2, 8:55 Pacific, 10:55 Central, 11:55 Eastern. And here we are on Monday evening, April 30th, last day of this month. Boy, this year has gone quickly so far. Seems like the older I get, the faster things move along. Time seems to go along more quickly. But I'm secure in knowing that the older I get, the better I was. Yes, I know a lot of you will be using that line. As always, I pay homage to the suits in the office at bbsradio.com. Tell me I have great sound tonight. Well, that's good. Wish I had great sound every night. So as I pay homage to BBS Radio and all alternative media for the important role that they fill, because before the advent of the internet, it was much easier for government to mislead us and lie and control and manipulate. Well, now it's not so easy, which is why they would prefer to be able to shut down or limit the internet, censor the internet. They especially hate guys like me because of what I stand for: freedom of speech, free inquiry, free press, liberty, property, and peace, anti-war. Very pro-gun, very pro-gun rights, but not a pacifist per se, but very generally anti-war. And my eyes have just been greatly, and my mind have been greatly opened up within the last 5 or 6 years. Thank goodness for objective, intellectual, scholarly revisionism, which has allowed me to see that most wars are contrived, they're set up, they're enabled, and that they just kill masses of people and they serve special interest groups, whether it's the king and his minions or his lords and vassals, or special privileged people, or come forward to today, the massive military-industrial complex. In fact, when I was a kid, we played Army a lot in the 60s. We played Army a lot. I was always sort of like the leader of my group. And war, you know, I liked war movies. War is exciting. I mean, I still like some war movies, but although I can't watch hardly anymore anything in the Pacific or D-Day, that kind of stuff, because my interpretation of how things were manipulated, especially in World War II, well, World War I also, which led to World War II and a whole bunch of other disasters. But anyway, as a kid, we played Army a lot. I had helmets and the little machine guns and stuff, and played in the woods, and, you know, shot at my friends, and they shot at me, and usually we won. Or when they won, they'd walk away saying, "We won the war," try to humiliate us. So all that war stuff was cool. I used to want to go to West Point when I was in, I don't know, fourth, fifth grade, sixth grade. I wasn't adamant about it, but I sent in, I got a brochure. So my old man was in the military, isn't it? Was in the Army and Pacific. So, you know, I thought war was kind of cool. Well, and enjoying war movies. Of course, a lot of them came out in the 60s. You know, it was 20 years after World War II. And plenty of time for the lies and things to be obscured. And, you know, of course, the history is always written by the winners, by the victors. So I didn't question the origins or the sources of war. I just took it for granted that, you know, we were the good guys. We were America, and we had to beat the Japs and the Germans and this and that. But I didn't question much about it because of what I learned in school, this general fairy tale history, and it never gave any of the intricate details. So I just kind of accepted, you know, we were the good guys. And come later on in life, when I get to my early 50s, I'm seeing, Pearl Harbor. Certainly, the U.S. government knew about it, and the British, because they had broken the codes. In fact, the U.S. intelligence was upset with British intelligence because British intelligence didn't always let the U.S. intelligence gathering people know all the details because the Brits, I think, were ahead of the game a bit. But anyway, we'll get to that in a minute, but I forgot to mention that if you care to call in and talk to the mighty PK here to challenge me, to praise me, to fire on me, whatever you care to do, the number here is 888-429-5471. 888-429-5471. And I've got the floor because I'm the man. It's my show. And but I don't cut people off if they were to call me. And I don't have my multitudes of listeners. I don't cut people off like talk radio. Here we're going to stick it out and deal with all the issues. So if we start with Pearl Harbor, for example, false flags, the U.S. intelligence and the government, they knew, FDR knew, they might not have known exactly what day, but they knew it was coming because Roosevelt, FDR, fascist Delano Roosevelt or fascist dictator Roosevelt, they knew in advance. They had broken the Japanese code. They had maneuvered Japan into firing the first shot. They had cut off Japan's oil. They had cut off scrap materials that they would sell Japan. So they tried to do everything to provoke the Japanese. And then they made demands that their Japanese diplomats knew would lead to war. So, you know, Roosevelt got his war. The people bought it. But in retrospect, it was lies. I think it was Admiral Kimmel and another general who were the commanders over at Pearl Harbor. They weren't informed about this. And then they were sort of kept in the dark. And then they were blamed, I think, court-martialed, too, shortly after. And what couldn't come out was the fact that the Japanese code was broken. They didn't want those details to come out in court or proceed from the court case, because that would only not only help the accused general and admiral, but it would let the masses know that the U.S. had broken the Japanese code. Now, those poor guys, Kimmel and I forgot the other guy's name, they were, I think, exonerated years later, posthumously, but that's just an example. So if you move forward to then the Korean War was also contrived. South Korea was needling the North Koreans. There was a bunch of stuff going on that provoked it once again. And then Truman calls it a police action, not even a war, and he commits all these troops. So the U.S. federal government has done a lot of instigating, just like they did in Vietnam. The Gulf of Tonkin incident in August 64, which ultimately led to war. The U.S. In I think March 65, LBJ Johnson sends troops ashore in Vietnam. So that was based on such a flimsy, wimpy deal where the North Vietnamese supposedly sent some torpedo boats to attack the Maddox. Well, what was it doing way on the other side of the world in, you know, probably Vietnamese territory or waters? So these are all things that you don't hear about till later. Because the greatest friend of truth is time. And I'm not afraid to talk about these things. Some people want to back away from it and say, oh, how can you not support, you know, the government or the military on this? Or, you know, isn't that unpatriotic? I say, no, it's, you know, what's wrong with the truth? So that's how I see it. But how I see it, I think, is also factual. Yes, there's some bad people in the world. There always will be. But these events and these people are often enabled by the globalists and the power structure of the day to suit their own aims, to enrich themselves in the military-industrial complex, in the banking system, politicians. That's just how it goes. And they're the ones that retire as millionaires and or with their fat pensions. Well, it's just the grunts, you know, who go to fight their wars for them. And a lot of these grunts, blue collar and middle class. I mean, they're very, you know, they're very Americans. They're very patriotic and very pro-America, which I understand. But they don't even question this stuff. And they go to die for these bastards who contrive these wars and set this stuff up. That's why the late, great Marine Corps Major General Smedley Butler wrote his book, War is a Racket, where he figures out after his service, I think after he was tired, that he was just a bag man for these corporations down in Central America or elsewhere and doing the work of the state and their special interests together. And that is not to say that he's anti-business or anti-capitalist per se, but he thought that these people trying to provoke all these wars, they ought to be out in front leading the troops. They ought to be, you know, in there now. And that's what we're faced with now, all these idiot neocons, these neoconservatives who have caused these problems and brought us to war, and now they want more war with Iran. So anyway, when I was a kid, back to when I was a kid playing Army and all this, I watched war movies, I saw people get killed and blown up, and, you know, I just thought it was part of the job, and to me it was more glorified, and I'm not saying it was cool, but, you know, there was patriotism mixed in there now. I wasn't a raving, flag-waving sort of person, but I didn't understand what I do now about how things are manipulated, how people are demonized, and who pays the ultimate cost, or the highest cost, and that is the, you know, Joe Blow, who's in the trenches out there fighting for what they think is, you know, our rights and democracy. I used to believe that, but I don't anymore. Plus, I don't really like democracy. There's only two aspects of it I like, I've mentioned before, and that is the democracy of the marketplace, where every penny is a vote for something that we want or need, and the democracy of elections, the peaceful way that we choose our leaders. Those are about it. I don't believe in mobocracy. I don't believe in majority rule. I'm for individual rights, individual freedoms, liberty, property, and peace, and a very, very small role for government, micro-government. So I'm not an anarchist. I'm not even an anarchy capitalist, although I'm very sympathetic to that very common Austrian libertarian view. But I see a microstate in a strictly limited constitutional republic that keeps the government on a very short leash, with a constitution that has teeth in it, unlike what we have today. And the scenario I see would also certainly include fully informed juries at every step of the game, fully informed juries where people can vote their conscience. We're not talking about letting murderers go, or rapists, or armed robbers. We're not talking about that. You know, those people need to be tried and convicted. Although you can still vote your conscience if you think a murderer is completely innocent. You know, you don't have to, you know, you don't have to vote to let him go. You don't have to, you're as a juror, you don't have to vote to let that person off. I mean, my personal view right now about this whole George Zimmerman thing is that he probably may have been justified with this. This kid probably may have turned on him. I heard that his Facebook page or something like that talked about thugs. Him, you know, thugs are cool. Or I don't know. I forgot the exact wording. I just read it. I don't know if it's true, but I wouldn't be surprised. So maybe this kid wasn't the nice kid that people thought he was once he's out of the view of his parents and family, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, that needs to be all worked out. I know I'm jumping around here, but I have to. And of course, again, with this George Zimmerman thing, if Zimmerman was black and he shot this black kid, it would hardly be news. Hardly be news at all, you know. And black on black crime greatly dwarfs any, you know, number of blacks killed by whites on a yearly basis is probably tiny. But black on black crime, I mean, especially like Chicago, all those kids and teenagers in their stupid war gang, all this gang stuff killing each other, ridiculous. And then in LA, I don't know how bad it is right now, but you had a lot of problems with blacks and Mexicans at each other's throats. So, can't blame Whitey for everything. Anyway, back to this war stuff. When Randolph Bourne said, war is the health of the state, I think he was right on the money. And it's still going on. You can still see it going on. So, as broke as this country is, as broke as we are, these neocon bastards, they want us to keep picking a fight with Iran. Iran is ringed by U.S. bases. I mean, who's the aggressor here? You know, it's ridiculous. So they, on behalf of Israel, are banging the drums. They would like us, the U.S., to, you know, keep providing them, I'm sure, with their bunker busters so that they can start another war, get a lot more people killed, get Americans killed, and the blowback from that, to me, is very scary of a possible war with Iran. Yeah, they might crush Iran temporarily, but it's not going to work in the long run. The blowback from that, well, there'll be more poverty, there'll be more hatred and animosity. You know, therefore, what, are they going to give the TSA even more power? I hate what's happening to our country. I keep hearing about how free we are ever since 9/11. This is turning into more of a slave pen. You're free to obey. Just more rules and regulations. And now the TSA, you know, they think they can, you know, harass people in bus stations and, you know, train stations. So I just hate the whole thing. I don't like what's happening. I don't like what's going on. This whole crowd pretty much disgusts me. And there's no need to further bankrupt the country. So anyway, that's something that we should think about, because the power of the state is growing, and now they want to use drones. I knew they would use drones locally. You know, police departments want them for you know, supposedly crime prevention. But they're going to start using them more at home, and they won't just be using them for, you know, police dealings with criminals. They're going to be using them to further enslave us and to have more power over us. I could see them hovering over people's homes. I picture it going on, all wrapped up in patriotism, of course, and giving jobs for people who want to sit in their little computers and run these damn drones around us and harass us with this stuff. Oh, and by the way, I forgot to say hello to those pricks out there from the CIA, FBI, NSA, those who are monitoring my show and other shows. Evil people like myself who dare to speak out. That's right. Well, we still can. Until Israel's most famous or important senator, Lieberman, gets his way and has his switch to turn things off, you know? You expect that in totalitarian countries. Well, maybe it's this country is turning into one. I don't think it's getting freer at all. It seems to be more control. You know, there seems to be more laws and regulations created. And I do rail against the federal government all the time because they deserve it. However, that doesn't mean local governments shouldn't let up either. I mean, local governments can be very oppressive. I mean, I've had to deal with it myself in real estate. The way these pricks come in and tell you what to do with your property and this and that, as far as egress and bringing it up to code without any concern with how it affects the tenants and the landlord. I've been through that before. I was in the middle of the city and their stupid regulations and then angry tenants, and the city wouldn't, you know, back off. So local government, state government has to watch their step too. Yes, we need a shrunken, massively shrunken federal government and massive decentralization. But even with decentralization, state and local governments need to back off. They shouldn't be heavy-handed or oppressive either. So, anyway, moving right along, I'm going to check out some things here from the Mises Institute. Some things about war I noticed that are worth mentioning. Where was I here? Let me get this article, pull this article up. I had it. I interviewed Karen Kwiatkowski last year. She's a very sharp gal. She's a former U.S. Air Force officer, lieutenant colonel. And she's a fellow traveler in the Austrian School of Economics and Liberty and Libertarianism and the Ethics of Liberty. And she speaks out against the injustices of the military industrial complex and pushing for more war. She got a kick out of my acronyms last year, especially APAC, which I proudly refer to as American Israeli Parasites Against the Constitution. She liked that one. And, of course, my definition for Iran: Israel requires American naivety. And my definition for Iraq: idiotic Republican authorized quagmire. Or Israeli required American quagmire. So, as I understand it, as far as Iraq, you didn't have Israelis pushing for it that much, the war with Iraq, but you had American Jews pushing for it, American Zionists, these pricks, Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Perl, I mean, Douglas Feith, I mean, three neocons I think should be immediately tried and executed. They're in denial about the problems they've caused, all the thousands, if not millions of people who have died, the millions of refugees this has caused, the millions of in property destruction for people, and all these other problems. Iraq was much better off with Saddam. He kept a lid on things. He wasn't a nice guy, but he kept a lid on sectarian violence. The U.S. has caused the death of more people than Iraq and than Saddam ever did. Probably twice as much. So, Karen talks about war and Mark Twain's war prayer. And she's aware of what's going on. She worked in the Pentagon, and she observed these neocons and how special they are for Israel. Of course, you know, to be a neocon or neocond, these are their origins are Trotskyites or former communists or socialists or Democrats who then they didn't like the way Israel was being treated by the left, I think, back in the 60s and this and that. And so with the blessings of Irving Kristol at SOB and then John Podoretz, or is that the father or the son? You know, those architects of neoconservatism, they found themselves in the conservative movement or the Republican Party and bringing their very pro-Israel stance with them. So, you know, a lot of Republicans are very pro-Israel. And of course, you got all these Christian Zionists who, oh, we got to protect Israel. Israel, you know, Israel, you know, who are not our 51st state. Nowhere in the Constitution does it say we're supposed to, the American taxpayers are supposed to provide Israel with a continuous supply of foreign aid and an endless supply of free American-made murder weapons. But a lot of Republicans, conservatives, oh, they clam up when you talk, when you're critical of Israel, you know, and they buy into this religious crap where they think, you know, Jesus is coming and someone want to bring it back. They think if we have war, Jesus will come even sooner. You know, I think they're both crazy. I don't think that's ever going to happen anyway. And so that's what we have, the Christian Zionists. And one of the worst examples and one of the worst purveyors of spreading that crap is Reverend, quote-unquote Reverend John Hagee of Texas. very pro-Israel, very pro-Israel, must this, this, and this, you know. But meanwhile, like I've talked about before, the majority of world Jewry is either purely secular and or atheistic or agnostic. They practice their religion as a tradition. So you got all these Christian Zionists wanting to protect Israel and the importance of Israel biblically, but they don't even realize that most of the Jews and the Israelis are atheistic. You know, Jews are not, I would say the majority are not, how am I trying to describe this? They're not as fanatical about belief in God as Christians are, you know, because they practice their religion as a tradition, most Jews, where Christians really believe in all this stuff. Jews do it, you know, it's okay. It's like, you know, pick some holiday, not Christmas or Easter. It's like a Thanksgiving to them, perhaps, you know, that kind of a deal. So, anyway, Karen Kwiatkowski, whom I interviewed last year, this former former lieutenant colonel of the Air Force, points out that about as far as Americans and this whole war situation, that Americans are increasingly sense the hardship and limited freedom in this 21st century as a reality for them and their children, you know. So Americans are slowly starting to wake up. You won't understand how dumb and naive a lot of Americans are. I hate to say most, but boy, there's a lot, until you spend some time outside of the country, you know. And it's like Karen says, Americans value peace and they're increasingly tired of war and the endless lies and prevarications about the wars that seem to constantly engage us. But like I said earlier in this broadcast, I just forgot what I was going to say about this war thing. Oh, yes. As I said earlier in this broadcast concerning wars of nowadays, thank goodness for the internet and alternative media, because people are they can see, yes, there's a lot of BS, of course, on the internet, but you can also read a lot of honest, truthful things. And you can see who's behind, who's pushing for these wars, this and that. So it's harder for the state to get away with their lies and their obscuring, overshadowing the reasons for war, because people can read about it and the word gets out more now. That's why, to me, Julian Assange is a hero. And poor Bradley Manning, good for him. The bastard's probably going to, you know, give him a serious court-martial, deny him his freedom, deny any public details about it, and it'll be just sort of a secret trial and they'll put him away. It's like Stalinism. I just hate what's going on in this country with the government. I hate it. It's like the bumper sticker. You know, I love my country, but I fear my government. Well, you know, I love my country, but I hate my government. You know, it's the problem. If it followed its own rules, we wouldn't be in this mess. And then, of course, they get people on their side. You know, these people wouldn't have all this power, because it's only like about 3 million people that control the rest of us. They wouldn't have all this power without the consent of the governed. And Americans are sheeple, and they confuse patriotism with loyalty to the government. You know, they don't even know a lot of things the government does. But these same people, they're right there to join up and fight the wars for it and basically kill people of the same class and status on the other side of the world. It's like that book P.J. O'Rourke had. He saw a sign in I think it was the first Iraq war, sign on some American base. I think it said, "Give war a chance." Well, I love the humor and hypocrisy in that, because this 10-year war has already cost a couple trillions. I think I'm pretty sure that the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, allowing for inflation, have now cost more than World War II. So there you have it. You know, and of course, Eisenhower questioned the growth of the military-industrial complex, and he warned Americans that unless that was checked, that we as a nation would sacrifice both peace and liberty, and you can see it happening. And I like to bring up 1984, because in that scenario, the national government continues fighting an overseas war continuously, just goes on and on and on. But meanwhile, at home, they're demanding conformity and control. Patriot Act, NSA spying, NDAA, Detention Act that Obama signed on New Year's Eve. Obama's awful. He's such a willing servant of the New World Order and the globalists. I mean, I can't even stand to hear him talk anymore. It's just, you know, it's just such BS. I think a lot of people in his own party don't even like him. You know, and so, oh boy, tomorrow's May Day. Does that mean the socialists will be out? I mean, war is socialism. It's centrally planned by the state, carried out by the state. The state micromanages everything. That's why governments like war. It's one of the things they're good at, with all their bureaucracies, and they hire more people, and they get more people involved. They think it creates more. It's temporary employment, but, you know, it's not a good thing. And like Mises said, even the victor loses during wars because it grows the power of the state and the intrusions of the state. So, interesting quote by George Orwell in 1984 when Winston advised about the future, dystopian future. There will be no curiosity, no enjoyment of the process of life. All competing pleasures will be destroyed. But always do not forget this, Winston. There will always be the intoxication of power, constantly increasing and constantly growing subtler. Always at every moment there will be the thrill of victory, the sensation of trampling on an enemy who is helpless. If you want a picture of the future, imagine a boot camp stomping on your face. Excuse me. Imagine a boot stomping on your face forever. Yeah. Oh, there's no camps in America. Right. Those FEMA camps. Jesse Ventura has seen them. I've seen them on YouTube, courtesy of Alex Jones. They've got them. And with all those black, big plastic coffins stacked up. So they say they're just going to be for detaining illegal aliens, but you know that they will put Americans in those camps in the future, those who resist the power of the state, of the central state. But as Karen Kwiatkowski says, we don't have to accept the boot of the state and its wars stamping a human face forever. Stamping on a human face forever, even as it is served up daily by the ever-ravenous political class. I like this. Sitting atop a sand-based pyramid of state paranoia. Peace trumps the zero game of war, and peace is additive, creativity, infinitely inventive and just. Only in peace can a true spirit of fellowship be experienced. To use the language of war, with which Americans have become so comfortable, peace always wins, even as a state inevitably collapse under the weight of their hubris and criminality, even as states collapse. So she's got a point there. But as long as Americans keep this gung-ho pro-war mentality, we're going to be stuck in this huge, massive welfare warfare state. So this demonization of Muslims has really helped, which I believe Israel's Mossad, I think had a massive role in 9/11, probably at least 90%. Maybe some rogue CIA people involved in this too. But you can see what happened, the demonization of Islam. So 9/11 is like, you know, 10 years after the demise of the Soviet Union, basically, and the wall coming down. So now the military-industrial complex did not have the communist boogie bear to go after. So now you know, global terrorism is a good way to expand things and spend more money on a massive military budget, massive military buildups, all these things that we don't need. We're protected by two oceans and friendly neighbors above and below us. So, like Ron Paul says, if we brought all the troops home, they would not only be spending their money at home, we'd be protecting our own borders. We wouldn't be picking a fight overseas and instigating. And that's what they do. They would love to start a war with Iran. And there's 70 million people there. We're going to get foot the bill for building that too, nation building that too. So I'm still very worried about the country and the economy. Financially I'm in the black, but I still worry. I see it around me how people are suffering and struggling. And I don't see it getting better. I just see Obama's lies continuing. Romney, I've seen some good pictures of him. They used to show a picture of, you know, an intertwined photo of Bush and Obama showing that they're the same person. Well, now I'm seeing one of Romney and Obama. And I saw a recent chart today of Romney and Obama, what they voted for or what they, you know, what they are for, what they stand for side by side. And it's pretty much all the same. Wars, TARP, empire, you know, gun control, all these sort of things. Romney is pretty much the same. I mean, I can't stand Romney. His father was a better man. You mean that Romney is the best people this country can do when there's a election? How many people will hold their nose and vote this year and vote for Romney? I mean, how sad is that? Is that the best this country can do? That so many conservatives, Republicans are going to vote for this guy while and hold their nose at the same time, so to speak? You know, so it's pretty bad. And like I said, Romney's father was a better man. In fact, he went to Vietnam and came back very opposed to it. And he was a Republican governor from Michigan. So anyway, that is a problem. Now, there's this other new bill that the Tea Party supported and most of the politicians. It's called CISPA, the Cybersecurity Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act. You know, this bill is full of intrusions into individual privacy and online liberty. It's just a mess. And, you know, they think it's fine. The Tea Party supported, I guess. I mean, the Tea Party is such a disappointment because, you know, as far as a small... If they're the small government wing of the Republican Party, then they've been heavily infiltrated by neocons. That's why I'm opposed to the Tea Party, because I find them to be pro-war. And again, I'm not a pacifist per se, but I am anti-war. And I see what it's caused and what it continues to cause. Unlike my youth, when I was, you know, a very sort of very pro-war, pro-military kind of guy. Well, then you start to see around you what's going on, and you discover more history, and you learn more history about things, and you realize that you've been sold a bill of goods. And that's why I'm so thankful to the Ludwig von Mises Institute and its great writers and authors and journalists like Thomas DiLorenzo and Tom Woods, Mark Skousen, of course, Murray Rothbard. So when you start reading the revisionist history and you say, wow, boy, that makes a big difference, you know? For example, in World War I, I never knew that the British cut the telegraph lines between Europe and the U.S., but left the telegraph lines between Britain and the U.S. So the U.S., got the British version of what was going on in Europe and the further demonization of Germany. So you know, you come to find out, oh, so it was France and Russia who mobilized against Germany first. They talk about the blank check that Germany gave to Austria in its war with Serbia. Well, Russia gave Serbia a blank check first. So this all this war stuff, World War One, which Wilson dragged this country into unnecessarily, using the Lusitania as an excuse and other things, even though the Germans took out ads telling people not to take part in that ship going across the ocean in the Lusitania because it was carrying weapons. It was carrying munitions for the British. So Churchill helped manipulate this even then. So these are things that they've done to manipulate people, governments in war for their own gain. And these aren't the people who are, you know, bearing the cost of it and dying. These idiots like Churchill, you know, they retire famous with all their money from all their writing and all their little perks. Meanwhile, it's the regular, you know, folks who are dying with their, you know, family hardships and this and that. I mean, in this country, in the good old USSA, as I like to call it now, United States Socialist America, or United States of Socialist America, military suicides are at an all-time high. And military spousal abuse at an all-time high. Military divorces at an all-time high. So, and then what do we have now that some Americans are worried about, or the government is? We have the rise of China. Because it's their century. So they want to pick a fight with China now too? Now, Obama stuck more troops in Australia now, northern Australia. Was that an outpost in our Asian part of the empire? As if China shouldn't be able to have its own navy patrolling its own areas? Since when does the U.S. own the high seas? But this is the mentality we have to get past that, you know, we sort of learn in school and it's drummed into our heads. But I tell you, there's almost nothing better than a neocon who comes around and quickly dispenses with that ideology and thinks, admits how foolish they were, how stupid they were, how wrong they were to support neoconservatism and more wars. When they come to their senses, it's great because they see that what they've been told, they've been fed a bill of goods, of course, wrapped up in patriotism, you know. So, of course, we have, like I said, the rise of China. So is that a new boogie bear? Now, they've got over a billion people, and nuclear weapons. So is Uncle Sam, is the federal government really going to, you know, maneuver trouble with China, a war with China, picking on China, especially when China funds our wars and we borrow from them for more wars, this and that, borrowing them constantly from them. So it's just, it's ridiculous. The inmates are running the asylum. You know, and it's just the military-industrial complex is sucking valuable investment capital away from the private sector who needs it for other things. We're just going to have a war-based economy? I mean, where's that going to go? How far is that going to take us? You know, Romney says he knows how to make business work. I've been in the private sector. Well, he has, but a lot of it's come from taxes also. So, you know, I don't trust this guy at all. And like I've said before, I'm either going to write Ron Paul's name in or I will vote Libertarian or I won't vote at all. And now it looks like Chris Christie could end up as Romney's running mate. But we don't know yet because There's could be a brokered convention. I hope Ron Paul goes all the way to Tampa and there's a brokered convention. And Ron Paul has a lot more delegates than he's letting on. He's won Iowa. He's won a couple other things since then, I guess, when it comes to the recounting and this and that. So, yeah, Romney might get the nomination, but it's not going to be – I don't think it's going to be a smooth ride. I think it's going to be a bit of a bumpy ride. Another thing you should check out, my multitude of fans, is if you look on YouTube and see – Black Ron Paul supporters and what they have to say. Some very good stuff. Some very good stuff on there. In fact, there's a black guy who posts many YouTube things about Ron Paul. He's very pro Ron Paul. In fact, this black man refers to Obama supporters as dumbass, Negroes, racist asses. This guy's probably 60, got kind of a graying beard, glasses. I think he might have an earring, and he wears like sort of a Panama hat. But he's real sharp. He's on the ball. And there's another guy. I think he's a black preacher, kind of a big guy, real nice. But he says, this is a couple months old on here, but he says, we need to get around a posse to protect this man because he knows that Ron Paul would be the target of assassins or ill will from the state because he is disliked by the regime. So when you have both Democrats and Republicans opposing you, you must be doing something right. You got to be the man. When the medical establishment doesn't like chiropractic, chiropractic's got to be doing something right. You know, that's how I see it. Even Steve Forbes is, pro Ron Paul's monetary policy. And there's an interesting, Ron Paul squared off against that idiot Paul Krugman yesterday or today. Today, I think, and on Bloomberg. And I wish Ron Paul would have ripped him even further, but the naivety and the stupidity of Krugman, a Nobel Prize winner in economics. What school of economics? Oh, of course, Keynesianism. Yes, yes. And he always seems astonished when people oppose his viewpoint. I mean, he's a statist as they come. He'd print more money. He's what a fool. He doesn't even understand supposedly the Great Depression like he says he does. Ron Paul took him to task pretty well. There's some other Austrians I'd rather see, like Robert Murphy, who would lay into a Krugman even more. But I know this chat was I've got off a little bit about war, but of course the Federal Reserve plays a big role in this, creating money out of thin air to further fuel the military-industrial complex and the war machine when they don't always just want to raise taxes or borrow. They got their Fed printing money. So that's a problem. And, of course, that idiot Krugman, you know, he's opposed to the gold standard. He'd probably be opposed to an honest audit of Fort Knox. You know, that's another thing Ron Paul has spoken about. And I think there might be some fraud with this gold. I don't even know if it's really pure gold like they say it is. So Americans should have every right to know to an independent audit of Fort Knox. Yeah, the government can have their people out there. They will have some good private non-governmental people audit Fort Knox and in any other government gold holding facilities. I think there's a lot in New York City, one of their banks there or the Federal Reserve offices there. So, but I think things are slowly changing. There's, thanks to Ron Paul, there's a movement of liberty that I hope is unstoppable. And it will continue because, just like the saying goes, nothing can stop an idea whose time is finally. Oh, something like all the armies in the world cannot stop an idea whose time is come. So the Ron Paul revolution, we've got to keep it going, because people know that they're now more interested in knowing about the Fed. And, of course, Ron Paul continues to draw tremendous crowds. Yeah, like I think he had 10,000 in California at one. You know, Romney has small crowds. Oh, but Ron Paul draws huge crowds. And college kids, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 show up to see him. And the media is silent about it. So he's the only other Republican in the race right now. I think Gingrich is out, that idiot. I don't know if he's still in. I think he's out. Of course, Sanitarium is out, thank goodness. So it's Ron Paul and Romney, but you don't hear anything about Romney. Sorry, you don't hear much about Ron Paul. You know, and of course now with the stupid American Africa Command, they're involving themselves more in Africa now too. That's all we need. Again, Obama being the first black president to bomb Africa when he bombed Libya. How sad is that? So when this country, if it collapses, one thing is for certain, the elites and the power structure, they will not lose their stuff. They will have money, they will have food, they will have protection, you know. But as I've said before, I favor the immediate trial and execution of a lot of Americans who are behind these wars and all these lies. And I don't say this as some kind of idiot like Shea or some leftist of any stripe wanting to kill the evil capitalists. I don't mind trying and executing these warmongers. And I think, personally, I think that Bernanke, especially Greenspan and Bernanke, should be executed, tried and executed for economic treason. For all I care, they can shoot them behind the White House, because they have caused so much suffering for American people by their policies and their denial of it. It was against me, and their stupidity, hear their speeches. Everything's hunky-dory, and a year later, boom, things tank. So just the audacity that they have, is rather shocking to me. And there's interesting essays on the Mises Institute website now about, there are some former troops or even serving in the military who have seen the light and have sent essays or articles to the Mises Institute. And it's interesting to read them because of their take on things. And what they have to say about it. It's pretty interesting. I was looking for one to mention here. Maybe it was Fridays. Oh, okay, here it is. I found it. This guy was from neocon. He went from being a neocon to a libertarian anarchist. Latin, too. Sergeant Rodriguez is his name. No, sorry, it's not him. His name's Christian Light. But it's interesting, his journey from where he was and where it got him. And he's trying to get out of the Air Force now, doing everything he can get out. He's not like a clinger, but it's interesting to hear his take on things. I'm trying to find him here in the article, because I've been jumping around on things I wanted to mention. But he was one of these pro-Bush people, and he heard about the Cato Institute through watching Penn and Teller. And then eventually he didn't know about Austrian economics. He didn't know that, he never knew that Austrian economics and libertarianism were such interesting subjects. And then he went all the way to the anarchist route, which is fine. I mean, because it's anarchy capitalism. It's not anarchy. I get a kick out of these, the hypocrisy of these socialists or communists who call themselves anarchists. You can't be an anarchist and a communist because they're completely opposite. I mean, communism, socialism is full state control. So that's why a few times I pointed it out to some people who said they're anarchists. But I said, but you're a socialist. You can't be an anarchist at the same time because you advocate government for this and this and this. How can you be an anarchist when anarchy is an absence of government? Not necessarily no rules and not, common sense and courtesy, but, you know, that's how it was. This fellow was a huge Bush Republican before he went from neocon to libertarian anarchist. I thought Bush was the greatest president ever, and I thought anyone who posed the wars was just a stupid, bleeding-heart liberal. But boy, did he change after he saw what was going on and going down, and after reading from LouRockwell.com and the Mises Institute, he did an about-face. My beliefs were changing so much, it was hard for me to wrap my head around what I really believed anymore. I had done a complete 180. So that's the beauty of it. When these former neocons come around and they realize that, man, have I been going down the wrong path? Man, was this all unnecessary? It really strikes home because they come full circle. And I know two people have come that way. And they sort of thank me for helping them get there. So there's hope. And with that, I am going to wind down this evening. Sorry, I jumped around on a few things, but I'm good at that. That's what I do. And with that, I want to remind everybody that I'm here every Monday evening here on Third Stream View at bbsradio.com, 8:55 Pacific, 10:55 Central, and 11:55 Eastern, here every Monday evening on bbsradio.com with your host PK at Third Stream View. Good night, everyone. We'll talk to you next week.